Hello again, fellow basement dwellers. It's your good friend Patrick O'Dowd welcoming you in to another edition of Bandwagon Nerds here on thechairshot.com, part of the Chairshot Radio Network. We got a contentious show coming up this week as myself and our good friends Dave and DP are going to break down the Umbrella Academy. We're going to talk about some massive layoffs that happened at Warner that impacted DC, and a little bit of speculation. Well, maybe a lot of speculation as we judge Matt Reeves a little bit today. But before we can get on to all of that, as I mentioned, I got some guests, or I got some co-hosts here to bring in. You know them very well as the scientist DPP and the man himself, David Ungard. Gentlemen, welcome back onto the bandwagon for another go around. How we doing?
Oh man, it's been a week. I think it's been a week for all of us, really, too. So,
very much so.
This will be fun. I think it'll give us a chance to let out some steam too, in our opinions on some of these things that we're going to talk about coming up too.
I joked before the show started when it was just me and DP on, Dave, that he needed to find the DP needed to find a sound, the ring bell sound for boxing matches as we go into some of these conversations, because it feels like there might be some at odds going on today. Very excited. Makes for an exciting show, in my opinion, if you ask me.
Yeah, I would hazard a guess that DP and I will not share your sentiment about the close of Umbrella Academy Season 1. We'll get into that pretty soon. I just got to say, between you guys and the guys on Pod is War, you guys have turned into like my spirit animals. Because it's the only thing keeping me sane are those two shows right now. So, you know, hopefully none of us get misted. Anybody listening to Pod is War this week knows what that's all about. But
so wait a second. So last week it was my therapy session. Are you saying that these shows have been like a therapy session for you too, Dave?
They're a good release. I mean, yeah, I mean, work. My work's weird because it's just busier than it's ever been, and it's like, and you know, now right. We're just starting to phase back where the courts are said, okay, we're not going to open up, but we got to move these trials forward. So now they're implementing video trials because all of us attorneys are like, I don't want to do a trial by phone. I need to actually look at this person testifying so I can know just how full of shit they are. You can't really do that over the phone.
Yeah, you got to get a read on people.
And that's been a big concern for everybody in my profession. So now they're doing it video conferencing, which, you know, isn't ideal, but it's better. And and so that's going to start ramping up. So, yeah, it's like you guys say, it's been a week. For me, it's just different than, you know, the crazy shit you guys are going through. But it is what it is, right?
Yeah, well, and I think we can appreciate that. You know, we talked about this last week when I did my little rant. You know, our school, UMass, is opening up this week. The few students that are moving in start moving in on Wednesday. And so we'll kind of see where we are. But it's interesting because we're really crazy busy right now to try and get this stuff ready for, you know, less than 1,500 students to come to campus. But it's still a lot of labor, a lot of intense labor, because this has changed so rapidly. Like, we went from trying to get all the campus ready to feeling like, oh, now it's not so bad. You know, we're down to these concentrated areas. And yet at the same time, like last week, all of a sudden it's like, we still got shit to do. Like, we got to really pump this up and get moving and going and going. And it's like, here we are. Still kind of just wrapping up those final little details. And yeah, it's unheard of. It's new. I'm mildly concerned. I keep looking out my window, guys, because it's raining now. And we all know what that means in the basement studio. So I'll keep you updated on that. Though at this point, I think we're at the, what are we going to do? Like, if it's going to happen again, we actually did survive an overnight storm a few days ago. So when I was sick as a dog, I had to miss the recording of the DeMarco show because I was just violently ill. And so I guess my wife was still awake in the middle of the night when I got up because I was still just feeling terrible, and she thought I was getting up to be like, basement did it again. But we weathered the storm. Apparently the Flex Seal tape and Flex Seal spray is holding shit together for a little bit as we use
the commercials are true. Wow.
Well, I don't know. This one's looking like a bit more of a steady rain. So we'll see what the real test is. What's unfortunate is that all the equipment I loaned to help clean my stuff out, I had to give back yesterday. So of course today it rains.
Well,
and so today will be the day that I need the working sump pump and I won't have it because I had to give it back. And that's just, you know, that's life, right?
Life pretty much. Life. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So can I tell you guys a couple of fun things I discovered this week?
Yeah.
Amazon
just one of
Prime.
Them. You can only tell us one.
Well, I'm going to share a couple. So I started listening to a podcast that isn't on the Chairshot family of shows. Sorry. I know, don't tell me.
Yeah.
I'm a little disappointed that I didn't discover this show or find this show earlier, but you all know I'm a big fan of the TV show Scrubs. Like, that's like my favorite sitcom of all time. So Zach Braff and Donald Faison, back in, I guess, March or early April, started a podcast where they are doing an episode by episode rewatch of the entire series. And it's called, I got to find the name of the actual show. It's called, let's go to library. Bear with me. Fake Doctors, Real Friends is the name of this podcast. And it's been pretty cool. The podcasts are nice and neat. They go episode by episode. They have guests. They come on the show, whether it be actors from the show. They've had some directors and producers. Bill Lawrence, the creator and showrunner, has been on more than once. And if you're a fan of that show, it's hilarious. It's great to watch or listen to. They have a guest. They take one fan guest every episode, and they let them ask Donald and Zach any questions that they want. And I've really found it fascinating. You learn a lot of cool stuff. The other thing that I discovered was today. I was bored looking for something to watch on any of my streaming services and was just flipping around Amazon Prime. And I came across a nifty little show from 1993 starring one Bruce Campbell. The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr. The only season is available to watch streaming on Amazon Prime. And
oh my god,
a lot of people, you're oh my godding. That was a cult classic TV show, sir, and was a lot of fun. And I'm watching the pilot now, and like any other pilot, it's like, whoa, this show got picked up, but it was canceled after one season, so it didn't really resonate with the fans as much as or with the masses as much as people would like it to. Wow. But it made me smile, like it made my heart smile watching the original pilot for The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr.
Well, it was Fox, right? So Fox will take a shot at anything, basically, right? Especially at
True.
That time.
And especially back then, yeah.
I remember, yeah. The only thing I remember about that is seeing the commercials during The Simpsons, but I never actually watched the show, so.
Well, and
I got nothing. I didn't even know it existed. I mean, it's Bruce Campbell, so it's got to be good, right?
Well, I mean, it's Bruce Campbell as a cowboy. Which
well,
is great,
that's
but it's
fine.
And it's very much an element of the Wild Wild West sort of esque show. Like it is this fun. It takes place in the late 1900s. It's like or 1800s. It's like 1893, and he is the son of a famous federal marshal, who he's sort of a bounty hunter. He's not a law enforcement official in the pilot, and he's trying to bring the gang that killed his father to justice. But throughout the whole thing, there's like science fiction elements to it, a la Wild Wild West, that old show from the 60s or 70s. I can't remember when it played. I think Dave was a child then, so he probably watched it on Saturday night, you know, Saturday mornings.
In the 60s? I don't know about that.
I don't know. I was laughing, though, yesterday when you chastised me in our chat because I forgot Brooks Robinson when I was
Frank Robinson.
Right.
Brooks too. Hey, you forgot Brooks too.
But the way you framed it, so we're having this conversation about like great baseball players. I'm like, I love baseball players from the 60s. I'd like name off all these people. And then Dave is like all indignant. Like, you left out Frank Robinson. Huh. And I can't remember how you wrote it. I was just like, I mean, yeah, I left him off, but it wasn't like I was willfully, you know, omitting one of the greatest baseball players of all time. That era just had a ton of them.
You are a willful child, like The Shining.
Oh, yes, very much so.
Patrick keeps looking over his shoulder at the rain.
I am. I'm about to text the missus to be like, door check.
Yeah, right.
There's some good things. The other thing I discovered that I'm going to rewatch since I saw that the seasons are available on Amazon Prime, by the way, Alias. Jennifer Garner. Not a big Alias group here.
I never watched it, honestly.
I watched some of it. It was good, but it wasn't something that like I really got deeply into, but it was fine.
You know who was a big Alias fan back in the day when it aired? DeMarco. I think actually Greg DeMarco is the one who got me into Alias, talking about that show and how great it was. So couple of gems out there. I was thinking about this someday. If we ever run into like another dearth of new content for television shows to watch, maybe we do a retro review at some point, take a show that we all love from like the 90s or the early 2000s and pull it back and do a rewatch, maybe even not like a whole hog, like start season one and go through everything, because that'd be intense. But like, you know, whether it's The X-Files, Star Trek, The Next Generation, I don't even know. I don't even know.
Can we watch like The $6 Million Man? Would that be acceptable? That would be cool.
I think our audience is a little too young for that show.
But it's such a great show. That's right. I mean, just the intro, you know, man. Steve Austin before Stone Cold, that sort of thing. The real Steve Austin.
Right.
And barely alive.
So anyway, just some food for thought out there. All right, Dave, let's put the gloves on. Let's talk. Strap them up. Let's talk. Yeah. Umbrella Academy, rapid review, episodes 6 through 10.
I don't know. Where do you begin, right?
Episode 6 was my favorite episode of the show. And it didn't become my favorite episode of the show until after you saw episode 7 and the results. Because episode 6 is the what could have been episode that happens before number 5 fucks up the timeline and things go wonky. Because in his effort to try and prevent the apocalypse, his actions lead to the apocalypse and also take away some of the best moments for his peers at the Umbrella Academy in a land of what could have been. And it was just, to me, it was a very beautifully done. It's actually a beautifully done pair of episodes as you see what could have been and then what actually did. And it is the catalyst to getting to Vanya and the Dark Phoenix Redux, as Dave put it in our chat previous to this. And so for me, in terms of character development and where we went, I loved that those two episodes kind of back to back, as it sort of showed you how close they were to a better resolution.
I'm trying to remember exactly what happened in 6 and 7.
So 6 was where, I'm going to mess up names.
It's called The Day That Wasn't, right? And then 7 right. was The Day That Was. So
right.
like Patrick saying, 5 goes and he cuts this deal with the handler, but it's really all just subterfuge so he can get back to his timeline and sabotage the apocalypse's impending, you know, it's coming, by, in his mind, eliminating the handler and eliminating the people who can stop him from intervening with this inevitability.
Well, and stopping killing
Harold Jenkins.
Yeah,
that's right, where you go. Right.
And that's the twist is that they think that this guy is the one who brings about the apocalypse, which he kind of does, but not in the way that they're probably anticipating.
But it's one of the, and this is where, you know, we're going to fight about this in a second. My ultimate problem with the back half of this season is just how tropey and predictable and infuriating I got with characters after we got past episode 7, to the point where I yelled at the television screen at the opening of episode 10 and then immediately sent the message that was, and I quote, "I fucking hate well, episode whatever it was."
Is it because they basically play dumb? Like they're all basically dumb?
They're just the decision they continuously blamed each other or made the just straight up wrong decisions and didn't listen to one another when they've established some of these relationships and bonds are stronger than what they were played out to be, drove me crazy. Just drove me crazy. And that, at the end of the day, like Luther just straight up ignoring Allison in everything that she tells him in regard to Vanya, written or otherwise, later on. Like, just that's not what Luther would have done. Like, and I, his sense of responsibility, you go through this, "I refuse to forgive my father, but now I believe my father," but I get that you might be conflicted or tore up, but at the end of the day, and this was my big problem with Vanya, everything for Vanya, like to take it out on the children or whatever, I get it, it's a very immature thing to do. You've also been given enough information as Vanya to know that it wasn't the children that were fucking with this stuff. Like it was her dad. And so to me, it was just patently, to me, the stretch was very annoying. It was very infuriating and it felt dumb. It felt contrived. It felt, as Dave said, it felt very cliche. And I just wanted to see it. And part of it, maybe as Greg would like to say, it wasn't on my playlist. I just felt cheated. Like I felt so cheated in that finale. And it was not satisfactory to me. It was very disappointing. The only thing that worked for me was the end and the intriguing result of where they are now that they have played the game, that we're again playing the game with time and hopping back.
Yeah, I guess the idea is that it was a whole conflictions between family members and things like that. And they weren't really a family. They all had their own agendas. They've been, you know, basically torn apart because of their dad. There was all sorts of, you know, everybody had their own problems with him and, you know, disagreements with everybody else. And they couldn't get along. I think that was what they were trying to go for, is understanding that nobody gets along with anybody. And everything is going to be a fight no matter what it is or what it's about. Nobody's going to agree with anybody and they're all going to go their own different ways and want to do different things. And eventually at the end, they get back together to just try and stop her, you know, stop Vanya. But, you know, nobody can agree on anything, I think, is kind of the whole backbone of this story, is that, you know, yeah, Luther, you know, was supposedly the favorite, but yet he's finding random different things, like, you know, all his research that he did on the moon, and it was all hidden and underneath the floorboards and didn't do anything with it, supposedly. And then, you know, so he's conflicted as to what to do and who to believe anymore. So, and then Pogo has apparently, you know, been hiding all that. He knew everything that was going on too, but never said anything.
Like Pogo knows everything. That was the moment when I yelled at the TV, by the way. Like, I think I said, "What the fuck ever," when Vanya's like, "Did you know?" I was like, "Of course you know he knows. Of course you know he knows, because your dad was an asshole. It's your dad. When you're fucking killing Pogo because his creation is number two." Like,
that's classic television, though. You want him to say it. You just want him to say yes. You just want him to say yes.
You know he's gonna say yes.
That's all you're waiting for.
To me, it just was. It was a cheap moment, and one that's just been done. It's been done to death, and I didn't like it, Dave. Rebut. Go ahead. Rebut.
Dan said it all for me. No, I'm just kidding. he said a lot of it, though. I think that part of what was going on in the last episode is it is a family in name only, a very fractured group of people brought together and called a family that really aren't. And I thought like the last few episodes were them trying to navigate through their own mistrust of each other, especially in that last episode where it seems like Luther, who has been called number one but never actually believed it, and then his lack of belief gets really damaged when he finds out, yeah, dad sent me there for no reason, apparently, to the point that he gets drunk and high at a rave and finally gets laid. Great. That's awesome.
Yeah, that wasn't awkward at all.
I mean, I can see what you're saying, Patrick. I liked the last episode. I did see it is Dark Phoenix. We were just having a debate, like my wife, my niece, and my nephew were texting back and forth, and he was like, I said, you know, the Dark Phoenix stuff at the end, it is what it is. And he said, oh, she's more like Thanos. And I said, how do you figure that? Because she brought a moon down on the planet. That's like, she didn't bring a moon down on the planet. She got distracted and blasted through the moon, and then the moon exploded. That's the moon doing that. And my wife and my niece are like, yeah, we think she's more Dark Phoenix than Thanos, so there's a win for me. But
and beyond that, in the Ungar household.
Yeah, rare. I mean, it is a Dark Phoenix moment mixed in with like a I hate to say it, because Patrick brought the Rise of Skywalker reference into things.
Oh,
in the
danger.
But look, no. But I mean, when her eyes change, it's like, okay, this is Anakin going to the fucking dark side. And she suddenly looks more like a vampire. And Vanya is the most interesting character in that, you know, she goes from thinking she's completely ordinary to Harold / Leonard teaching her that you're far from ordinary. You've got all this extraordinary stuff that's been suppressed. And then she just, it is exactly like Dark Phoenix. And if I have a problem with it, it's like you rip that off. And I appreciate the fact that they actually did 10 episodes to tell the story, unlike the movies. You know, and she can't handle her powers. She doesn't know how to deal with it. It's too much for her. And, you know, she takes it out on everybody around her who she thinks has wronged her, right or wrong. You know, I mean, there's lots of aspects of the story that I like. I mean, the stuff between Luther and Allison, I enjoy seeing that. You know, I really thought Allison had been killed in episode 8. I was just like,
right.
I said that felt like a kick in the balls because I didn't really see that coming in that manner. But I, you know, I mean, yeah, I would say that there's stuff to be. You can definitely poke at it and say, yeah, this is tropey. This is cliche. This is predictable. I get that.
I'm not poking. I'm punching.
I still left episode 10 at the end of it feeling cool. I mean, that was pretty interesting. I want to see what happens now. I think if I was unsatisfied, it's just like they left so much unresolved because it's like at the end of episode 10, you're like, okay, now they've got to go and try and fix Vanya. And if they're going to prevent the apocalypse.
That, interestingly enough, what happens next, I'm down for. If that makes any sense. And that's the thing is, episode 10, for as much as I dislike how we got there, I'm ready to see where we go next. Because there, you talked about it, Dave. There's a lot of threads that are open left to do. So how do you fix Vanya is one. You start to see that Klaus has discovered a new dimension to his powers, as he seems to be able to make ghosts corporeal in some way to then actually manipulate the environment around them in the form of, was it Ben? Is that his name?
It's Ben, yeah.
Ben. And so we're going to get to see, you know, we got to see Ben with the tentacles, you know, hinted at early in this show, but, you know, not completely done there. There is the question of Allison's powers because her vocal cords play a role in her ability. Will she ever have that back?
Well, she's been put back in time. So presumably that hasn't happened.
Well, but don't do that. We don't know what state they're in. We don't know if they actually became children too, even though they showed them as children.
Right. Right.
So are they going back as kids? Does that reverse them to where her powers are back? Does her going back in time in some way, shape or form heal her? We don't know.
And I think that's a good question. Another big question is, by going back in time, are they going back in time with the knowledge of what just transpired to go and undo that? Like five has all the knowledge of everything that happened, you know, when he time jumps. So are they going back in time with the knowledge? Because that's going to make it, you know, season 2 interesting as to whether they're all back in time with that knowledge.
They've well established that rule is true because Five is 58 years old in a preteen's body. So he's retained everything he's observed and seen. So unless the rules of time travel are different for the other 6 or 5, 6'5", whatever. I don't know what it'll mean for Ben.
Yeah. I mean, is Ben alive?
Well, he's alive somewhere.
Yeah.
Depending on where they land.
Depends on where they go.
1989. Like, you land in 1989, he's just being born. So he's around.
Yeah.
But I think they will know remember what they're there to do.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, hopefully, I mean, if I were to, and I haven't seen any spoilers or anything like that, because 5 has never done this before, there's always the potential that they get separated. That's always, it's a trope and it's a thing that can happen. Do they get separated through time? Do they get separated in the same time? That could be something that happens. Well, if they all end up together, where do they land? Do they end up in the muck? Like, are they in Vietnam a la Klaus? Or are they, you know, like, where do they land? Do, you know, how does that all work? Because the question that's never really been answered to me for number 5's power is, does he control how far back and where he goes?
Right. And I haven't seen spoilers or watched anything, but I did read the description for the first episode of season 2, and it does look like they're all displaced in time, and 5's got to go and find them.
There you go. I would like a bell, please. Can I get a bell? Ding, ding, ding. it could come late too. I don't care.
Where is the sound effects, DP?
Got it.
Nice. It's fine. Can you not hear him? No, I can't hear
him. Oh, shit. Well, that could be a problem. I hear him on my side. They're great.
Yeah, it's crystal clear on your end. That's right.
For what it's worth, Dave, we've had a very civil discourse here today.
Well, I was going to ask, at the beginning of episode 10, the first scene is Reginald with that lady who's dying, he's got the violin. I guess it's his wife.
That's his
wife.
Then
you see all the missiles launching from the the heartland, basically. So it looks like nuclear war.
Looks like world war, like some kind of world war or something.
We don't know. Here's the thing that's very important about that scene is it tells you just how important Vanya was to the whole deal. And that he really did, on some level, care for her. Because giving her that violin, that has meaning. Also, what the fuck did he release to the sky? Did he create the children?
Yeah. Yeah, what was that he released to the sky? I don't know. I mean,
I'm just saying, it's like, he created them with his fairy dust.
Maybe. I think we might get some of those answers in season 2. There's a couple things that I noticed when I rewatched the whole first season, which were kind of interesting. I don't know if you guys noticed this or picked up on it at all, but if you watch between Vanya and Ben, like Vanya, as the series goes on, her colors, their clothing that she wears changes from black to white. Like as she starts to learn her powers, she goes from being just wearing all dark clothing to all of a sudden becoming, you know, lighter clothing. She started going to the blues and then getting to the whites as she starts to really understand her powers. Like she's becoming more visible.
That's very subtle. Yeah. I noticed, obviously the white at the very end, like she's a beacon, but hadn't really paid attention to the progression. That's a good catch.
Yeah. And then same thing with Ben too, I guess as Klaus starts to get his powers a little bit stronger and starts to connect a little more with the dead, Ben starts to become more visible. Like at the beginning, he's wearing, you know, kind of a hoodie. Yep. You can't really see his face or anything. And again, as like the season goes on to the end, when you can start to really
strengthens it,
get him, you can start to see Ben clearer as a ghost, which I thought was really interesting.
That's very clever. Yeah, camera. That's good. That's good imagery.
Yeah,
it makes me wonder how deep Klaus's power can go. I mean, can he actually resurrect the dead? You know, at some point in time, who knows?
Maybe. And then the last one was the comparisons of number 5 and Hargreaves and the father. I don't know if this is going to have any bearing in the future story, but you watch when Hazel and Cha-Cha first show up and they describe who they're looking for, and they describe it's an older gentleman who has a limp. And then you start to see Hargreaves, whenever you see him walking, when they show flashbacks of him or whatever with the cane, he has a limp. and his left, I think it's his left foot. And then eventually there, when number five gets shot, I think, I don't know if it's episode nine.
It's a shrapnel from the grenade or something. Yeah.
Yeah. He starts to get a limp in the same leg that Hargrave's had. I don't know if that's a bearing, but like something you wouldn't have noticed.
The scientist bringing the imagery, the symbolism, the foreshadowing today, Dave.
It only took two watches to get to find all that shit, but you know.
He's a scientist for a reason.
Now, are you poker facing us? Have you watched season two?
Absolutely, I've watched season two.
Okay,
that's what I thought. That's what I said. Maybe we probably shouldn't watch it. I do know those answers if they do come into play, but yeah, I won't spoil anything. So I'll let you watch it. I'm gonna rewatch it as well as we go through too.
DPP, also known as red herring. There you go.
Well, and here's the deal: we're of course gonna watch episodes 1 through 5. Even though I won't be here next week to cover it. So you two will cover ground.
I wanted to ask you about that. Did you want to split it into three parts?
What gets us to the boys on time?
Well, if we split it in three parts, like if we did four this week and then we did three and then three the following week, the last three would be the same week that the boys launches. Like that pod, like the boys would come out Friday and then we do like the last three of Umbrella Academy season two. That same Sunday. So,
and then we can catch up the boys.
The next week we could do the boys.
Because the boys is going to drop three episodes on its launch before it goes into its weekly drop.
Right. Right.
So we can catch up the boys that way. Because here's, I'm going to share a story with you. I almost started the show laughing about this. I saw a meme floating around. It was a comic strip and it was like podcasts. It was like a podcast quick reference guide. It's got all these different ones. And one of them was like two white women solving true crime stories. But then there was one that was nerds reviewing a show everybody's already watched. And I was like, shit, that's what we're doing. For the first half of every show. I mean, we don't do the whole thing. Like our whole show isn't dedicated. I was like, but man, we're a cliche podcast. Sort of. I like to think we're more than that.
I call bullshit on that, you know.
Right.
Just because some jack off out there decides to post some memes about what he considers to be cliche podcasts. And I'm sure that freaking.
Hold on.
Done a podcast of his own, but anyway.
You're going to call bullshit on that, but post bullshit Dave Meltzer stories on the internet?
I just posted a fucking thing about what he said. I never said whether I agreed with it or not. I just posted out there said, hey.
Oh, you did that. You did that clickbait thing where you're like, what do you think? I love it.
It got a reaction from people.
So overall, your thoughts on season one as we head into season two, we got a lot of mystery out there. It's for me more about powers and discovery. And I will be interested to see where that goes. I will say the thumbnail for season two on Netflix is 7 and 5 or Vanya and 5 wandering about together doing something. So it'll be interesting to see where that actually fits into the show itself in that context. But I will say, on the whole, I did enjoy the show very much so. While I did not like how it got there, I am in on where we're going next. And so overall, it is a plus show in my book. Not my favorite one that we've reviewed, but it is a plus show in my book.
I concur with that. I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I enjoyed the show very much. I don't think it's my favorite of all of them. I mean, it's still the boys and Mandalorian and Witcher for me, you know, maybe possibly in that order, I would say. I mean, I like Locke and Key a lot. I like the boys a lot. I'm with you, Patrick. I'm all in to see where are we going? How is this going to work itself out? You know, is this apocalypse truly unavoidable? And, you know, every time they fuck with the timeline, it changes how the apocalypse gets there. I don't know. You know, but I like you, I'm all in to see how they work this out. I mean, does Vanya come to the realization that, you know, oh shit, I'm the Antichrist. I need to fix that. You know, that sort of thing. It'll be fun to get there. I mean, I care about the characters. So that's always good when you're emotionally invested in the characters of a show. So I care about what happens to them, and I want to see. I want to see where things go. Sure.
I had. I had read the comics before even watching any of the television shows that before they put them out there. I'd kind of known a good handful of the stuff, at least from the comic side of what was going on and everything. But they only had they've only done three volumes of collections of comics, and only two of them were out at the time of season one. And, you know, seeing what they did with season one, where they kind of did a grouping of volume one plus a little bit of stuff from volume two, you know, was really intriguing how they kind of put that together. And obviously some things didn't work, like Carol Jenkins and the whole eye thing was not anywhere part of the comics or anything like that. And, you know, at the end of the first volume of comics, Vanya gets shot in the head by Number Five to stop the apocalypse. And then Klaus actually stops with his abilities, stops the piece of the moon from hitting the Earth. So it actually stops the apocalypse in the comics, where it seems that it happens in, you know, in the show. So definitely some differences there. And
just a slight difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that you're like a little modification.
Little modifications. You know, the apocalypse never happens. Slight difference.
I got one other question I wanted to ask, and this is less to do about the show itself, but more of an opinion thing. And I am doing this to rile Dave up probably more than DP, but there has been some petition circulating in regards to the handler, and folks arguing that the handler character is anti-Semitic because she speaks Yiddish in a couple of episodes as part of her character. I can already see Dave falling back in his seat and shaking his head. And the argument being made is that it has been a long common trope of evil Jews and that whole sort of rigmarole that led to the rise of Nazi Germany and phobias for centuries. So I'm asking the question, knowing that we are stepping into dangerous territory, but I'll turn it over to the Jewish man first. Jewish lawyer?
Okay, well, it's still early in the day out here, but that's the dumbest thing I've heard today. It's just like, I mean, come on. You're really reaching and grasping for shit if that's what you're going to complain about, that, oh, it's the evil Jewish bastard. You know, it's like, because she says a few things in Yiddish. She says a few things in French, too, I'm pretty sure. Is that problematic as well? I don't see the French people being up in arms about who gives
a
shit.
French people are trash. We all know that.
Right? Oh, geez. Now you've just buried the show.
Send your hate tweets to @ Wrestling Realist.
Yeah.
That's @ WRESTLNGREALIST.
Greg's going to be like, you know, 20 of your 22 listeners were from France, right? And not
right. We were big in France until today.
That's right. So it's like everything else in the world right now. If you want to make a point about something, or if you want to argue about something, there's more than enough fodder out there for you to have a sliver, a tangential thread to grab onto and hope you can unravel that sweater, you know? So, hey, people want to sign a petition about that, knock them out. I'm more interested in the petition to get the Big Ten to play football than some idiot out there saying, oh, they shouldn't.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, shouldn't use Yiddish in the umbrella cap.
To play football.
She got shot in the head. She's done. Who cares?
She's not done. Stop it. I can't buy that bullshit. All right.
You really think she's going to come back for season two?
I will tell you the part of Umbrella Academy that I wasn't feeling so much was the Hazel and Agnes thing. I didn't get it.
Oh, I thought it was sweet.
It's
was
sweet, just, but it just, it's like,
because he doesn't want to live the life anymore. It's okay.
He found an outlet. Right. He found a way out.
Convinced. Yeah, they got the briefcase at the end. They took the handler's briefcase and you got to wonder, okay, where are Hazel and Agnes now? Watch, Agnes is going to be the badass. She's going to be the trigger for the apocalypse in this timeline.
She has said, well, here's the thing. You make that joke. She is the one who has the line. We all have secrets.
Yeah. It's like,
she can control birds.
Hold a sign over my head.
The pay birds are the secret.
Pay attention to me. I've got a secret. Everybody's got a secret.
That's right.
We'll find out.
I heard a rumor. Oh, sorry.
No. That power is not in play right now.
We get no more rumors.
Right. Well, but what we are going to do is we're going to talk about the conundrum we have with our nerd poll, because our polls are struggling, fellas. We took 1 week off of doing a movie vote, and like the 22-23 voters we had abandoned us. You know, and I don't know if it was Dave's fault with his like 3-person poll, but we only had 12 vote this week. Maybe it was 6. I don't remember what it was. It was, the results were not good, but we ended up in a tie between Superman 2 or Iron Man in the nerd review poll for this week. So yeah,
people not feeling the whole superhero thing.
I don't know if people are not feeling the super. Yeah. Do we need to go back to comedies? Like, I'll go Bruce Campbell. Like, I think, if that's what we need to do, like, we could do something like, I don't know. But like, I was actually going to flip back, see just how bad this was. I think it was 6 voters total, which is less than stellar.
Yeah. 53 voted one way, 3 voted the other.
Right. That's just sad. Yeah, 6 votes. 6 votes.
Whew. One more than the week before. Jesus.
Right. I thought for sure having something like Neil Before Zod, I don't know. So
I told people to vote for their favorite man. That didn't work.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Well, and let's be real, the Kick-Ass Women poll, while we liked it, and at least I liked it, I don't know how you two felt about it, it also didn't yield great results. So we gotta figure out that viewership, maybe get, and again, try to get Bandwagoners Twitter going a little bit better. But we are currently on pause to determine, and maybe we'll just determine it off air and surprise the fans as to what we do. Because fuck it, if they can't decide, why can't we just make the call? It's our show, right?
I'm in.
I say we have PC Tunney break the tie.
He'll go DC.
He probably will. And if we were going to do Superman 2, the one guy who did comment about doing the Richard Donner cut, I would agree with that. That if we did,
that's the only version I have.
Okay,
I think that's the version on HBO Max too.
Is it?
It might be. I know that the Batman versus Superman is the extended cut. It's not the theater cut.
Well, that's an improvement, believe it or not.
For what it's worth.
I say we go with new movies and one that was just on our last poll and go with the old guard. You know?
I can do that.
Something like that.
Charlize Theron. I'm down for that.
I know that
there's
was a big
another one.
One.
There's another one that's coming out too that I'm interested in getting your guys' opinion on, with Jamie Foxx, that just came out. And the name of it's gonna elude me here. It's a Netflix movie. And it's another
Project Power.
Yes. And it's either dropping now or dropping soon, or just dropped. But it's another one. It's about a drug that gives people unpredictable superpowers, but only for like a limited period of time. Yeah. So,
well, there you go. That fits in with the superpower. That fits in with superheroes, you know. I like it.
All right.
You know,
let's do Project Power on Netflix. We'll watch it fresh.
Yeah. I think that might be a good little run to do some like brand new ones that, you know, not instead of going old school, stick with new stuff that's just getting released. Give some fresh reviews.
I'm sorry. I had to step away for a second. And then the Caps lost in overtime. Fuck. Anyway, what were you saying now?
I think we're going to review Project Power. It's a Jamie Foxx movie that just dropped on Netflix. It's about a cop who's trying to wrangle in a drug that gives people superpowers for 5 minutes.
I get.
So just dropped on Netflix like this past week.
2 days ago.
Yeah, 2 days ago. Nice. So this is a fresh nerd review. There you go. We are jettisoning the old... taking the scientist at his suggestion, and we are going with something new. So this week's nerd review poll, look for it. It's going to be Project Power. I'm excited. Gives me something to watch tonight before I call it a day, because I think I'm going to crank up the old Netflix and check it out tonight. Sounds fun.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt's in it too. I'm a big fan of his.
So. Excellent. Good, solid cast. All for it as we look at the future of movies. streaming all the time. Anyway, so this is a movie that's not done yet. This is a movie that I don't even know that there's any real details about the script, but I shared an article with y'all and I figured we'd talk about it. We're going to talk DC because that seems to be what the show is right now. And I shared this article with you because I wanted to hear Dave's first take on it, but it was about Matt Reeves' upcoming Batman movie, which I'm assuming we'll learn more this weekend at DC FanDome. But it was an opinion article that was talking about the number of villains that have been cast for the Batman and whether Matt Reeves is biting off more than he could chew and dooming this movie to failure because of too many bad guys. So for the record, I'm going to try to go through and make sure I've got everybody that's been listed. We've got the Penguin, who I think is scheduled to be played by Colin Farrell. Colin Farrell, right?
Yep.
We've got the Catwoman, who's going to be played by, oh gosh, what's her name? Zoe Kravitz. Oh, sweet. We've got Paul Dano, who's set to play the Riddler. And it seems that they've now announced that John Turturro is going to play Carmine Falcone, the leader of the underground, the crime syndicates in the underground of organized crime of Gotham City. So, first of all four of these actors that they have cast for these villains are top-notch people to cast in their roles. So casting, I don't think, is going to be the problem here, fellas. But what do you think about the argument that maybe Matt Reeves is biting off more than he can chew?
Oh, man. I think it's a valid concern. You know, I mean, when you're talking about those kind of villains, I mean, those are all high powered villains in the Batman universe. And, you know, we've seen more often than not, when you do this big mishmash of villains and having too many characters on screen, more often than not, that doesn't work. I mean, there's a handful of exceptions. The Avengers are an exception. You know, some of the stuff in The Dark Knight where they had, you know, the Joker going and kind of Harvey Dent's descent into turning into Two-Face. Okay, that worked. But then for every one of those, you've got Spider-Man 3. You've got Batman Forever. You've got Batman and Robin. You've got, you know, Fantastic Four with the Silver Surfer and Galactus, which didn't work. There's way too many people on screen. So it's a dangerous proposition, to be sure. It really, like I think you said it, Patrick, you know, without a script or any sort of context to look at this, it's speculative at best to say, yeah, this is doomed to failure or maybe this works. I mean, if they're going to run like an Arkham Asylum sort of thing where it's just a united front to try and take out Batman and he's just fighting for his life for 2.5 hours, that might work. But, you know, if they're just going to randomly throw these people together and say, okay, what's the end game here? And without any sort of cohesive storyline, probably going to be a problem.
I get it. We don't have the story yet. Right. But is DC going to learn their lesson or not? Like,
this has been
their problem, is dumping everybody at you at one time. Justice League, Batman versus Superman was, overrun with too many characters. They tried to throw everybody at you at one time without giving you a background to these people. Like the Avengers, was a huge group of people at one time, but they built it up. They had separate movies for all of those people to build it up. Like,
right.
Christopher Nolan with the Dark Knights got it right, I think. You know, they had basically one main villain with a secondary, smaller villain right around there. Like you said, the Joker was the big villain in the second one. And then Harvey Dent kind of building up to Two-Face there towards the end, who didn't really get a huge part of it. And, like, you know, and then with, you know, Bane and Falcone was kind of behind, was the second one behind there, you know, when they took down the whole syndicate there. You know, that's about the extent of what they did. And that worked amazingly. And the problem with all these DC movies is that they put too many characters into it at one time. And it doesn't work. It's too much.
Right. Batman Begins also for that, three villains when you look at it, because the Falcone underworld is part of that movie as well. And then you had Dr. Crane as the Scarecrow, and then of course Ra's al Ghul, and the way that he kind of definitely bookended the League of Shadows was really well done. And that's the thing, is I think that we've been burned so many times by DC and their inability to put together a consistent narrative where multiple villains works, that we instantly have a mistrust of it. Because I agree, I think there's a way where you can have all four of these characters as a part of the movie, but if we're expecting all four of these characters to be a primary antagonist of Batman, you're going to have a mess. And to do a Batman movie and your first movie out be a rogues gallery up against Batman, that's the end game. That's the end of the story. That's not the beginning of the story. Now, if this is one of those things where some of these villains are tangential and just sort of part of it or introduced in a way, like maybe Selina Kyle's in the movie, but she's not the Catwoman necessarily yet, but you know she's going to be Catwoman eventually. Maybe if that's sort of the direction that we go, which, by the way, I always get confused because I always flip-flop Dano and Farrell and their roles. Like, to me, Dano looks like the Penguin more than Farrell looks like the Penguin. And yet I'm just like, okay, whatever. But yeah, I'm trying to be patient with it. And I'm trying to be the guy that's like, well, let's see what Matt Reeves does. Let's see what the script actually does. But if you got all four of them going after Batman and trying to work together, then it's going to be a hodgepodge. It's going to be a mess and it's going to be gross. And I'm a little nervous about that. And yeah, I just don't trust it. And even in, you know, Marvel movies, they don't, a lot of times that secondary character isn't there very long. Like, I think Captain America does it pretty well because they had Hydra. And Hydra, like, I think of Winter Soldier in particular, like, Crossbones is a part of that whole movie, but he's not really Crossbones till the end. Like, he is in sort of that the person's there, but he doesn't become Crossbones. Where I think they really shit the bed is that he got, like, the crappiest death ever in Civil War. Like, he's in the movie for 10 minutes and then gets blown up by Scarlet Witch. And it's just like, okay, you paid for this dude to kill him like 10 minutes in the movie. Whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I'll be intrigued to see where it goes to. I have concerns just like the two of you, but I'm hopeful that maybe some of it's like Harvey Dent in Tim Burton's Batman, where, you know, there's Billy Dee Williams and he's Harvey Dent. He's Harvey Dent through two movies with not a whisper of Two-Face coming along.
Yeah. And then he turns into Tommy Lee Jones. Weird.
It was a miracle. It was amazing.
That coffee they got thrown at him just really changed him.
we should stop this line of joking. Seems dangerous.
Yeah. But I mean, even those first Batmans.
I've seen shit that would, it's like Ghostbusters. Never mind. Just go on.
Seen shit that'll turn you white.
Thank you, Patrick. I'm glad one of us can talk today. Thank you.
Well, he's drinking water,
you're
not whiskey. Oh, there it is.
The vocal cords, trying to keep the vocal cords a little better lubricated with some water in addition to the diuretic. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I think we're going to learn more at DC Fandome, even though Dave seems to wonder if DC Fandome is going to happen, but more on that later.
Oh, no, I know it's going to happen, but anyway.
We did get a snippet of some hopeful Mandalorian rumor. Dave shared this out. This weekend could be big on two fronts. We could get some DC news. We could get some Star Wars news. Rumor has it that we could be getting a Mandalorian trailer during the NBA playoffs, either this Saturday the 22nd or Sunday the 23rd. I don't really have more to this post other than, fellas, how we feeling?
You're excited. I mean, feel these nipples.
Terrific response, Joe.
I mean, it would make sense for something to happen. I mean, the rumor is what, like October 22nd or somewhere in there for season two of The Mandalorian. So yeah, I mean, 2 months out to get some sort of teaser, even a teaser of something for season two, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
It would. It would match DC, or not DC, Disney's ML, and just sort of timing and when we would pump something out. So I think there might be some legs to that rumor.
It's more reliable than the Meltzer rumor, that's for sure.
Always more reliable. Well, that's not a tough bar to leap, Dave.
That's right.
That's like true. 3 inches off the ground, man. You just step over it and you've leapt the truth, the reliability bar of a Dave Meltzer report.
It's tripping over an extension cord.
Yeah, really.
What do we want to see? I guess that's the other question. If we get a trailer, what do we want to see? Because you know you're not going to see much, right? Right. Like Disney is notorious for a 30-second trailer of just flash, flash, flash of another thing, another picture, another picture, another picture, and then the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, some of the more wild rumors that I've heard have involved like a potentially somehow getting Boba Fett involved in the Mandalorian.
Shut the front door. Shut up.
You've heard it too, I'm sure.
Why do people like Boba Fett so much? Why?
They just do, Patrick.
He does nothing. He is literally a nothing entity in Star Wars.
Wait a second now. He tracked down Han Solo. He helped transport him to Jabba the Hutt.
He got swallowed by a worm.
Maybe not.
No. Swallowed by a worm. Fuck your books.
I can't argue that.
It's canon, Patrick.
Thank you.
I think he was a terrible character too. But he was a worthless character. Terrible. He didn't do anything really.
He just stands around and looks kind of cool.
He was just,
and people latched onto it.
Yeah.
This, you gotta understand, DP. This is a reflection of a Twitter discussion because I'm still trying. DeMarco doesn't believe it's happening, but I'm rewatching the movies, and I just rewatched the Force Awakens, right? And I'm sitting there watching it, and I just tweeted out how much of a wasted opportunity was Captain Phasma in that movie,
which I agreed with you 1,000%.
And somebody replied that they wanted her to be this movie's Boba Fett, to which I responded, "And Boba Fett, I don't get it. Like, I don't get it, other than he looks kind of cool. Like, he just walks around. He doesn't even actually capture Han Solo. Like, that's the funny thing. He doesn't do it. Vader does all the work. All that Boba Fett does is say, hey, I found Han Solo, and the Empire and Darth Vader catch him. And then Boba Fett gets the frozen remains and drives up. He's a bottom feeding, half-assed bounty hunter that people were like, well, he's got a rocket on his back. He must be a badass. Never fired the rocket either.
He did once. Rocket.
But it sounds like you're equating him to Jar Jar Binks with that description. And
No. Here's the thing is he's not important to the show. Like, he's really not. He's not important to the canon. Could have been anybody.
I mean,
His
ship looks like a shoe.
Yeah. Slave One looks like a shoe? Blasphemy. But it's true.
It's a shoe.
So season two. Send
your hate tweets at Restingualist. At WRESTLNG. R-E-A-L-I-S-T.
Man, you are just racking up the hate tweets. The entire country of France is going to fucking Patrick will be blocked by the country of France. That you're going to be the first person to be blocked by an entire country.
Actually, Dave, given our current state in the world, the entire United States is basically blocked by the world right now.
I don't know
if you paid attention. Here's the thing is, you know, I think that the name of this week's episode is going to be Boba Fett's a fraud. I think that's it. Like, Boba Fett's a fraud.
You're definitely trying to alienate our fan base.
Nate's like holding his face. He's like, why is he doing this to me? Oh, I love it.
Can you come up with something more diplomatic than that? I mean, that's a little bit harsh.
Boba Fett's a complete fraud?
DP, save me here, please. I know you don't like him, but, you know.
Overrated? Just Boba Fett's overrated?
That might work.
I'm just looking for a release date for season 2 of Mandalorian.
I think we said like October 22nd is the rumored date.
Well, if this trailer comes through, I think you get your wish. I really do. I think this trailer will come through. It'll be 30 seconds long, and it'll have a flash of a release date, and it'll be late October, early November, which is perfect for us because we will be wrapping up the boys, and we can start talking about The Mandalorian.
There, I got you off on the thing. Happy, Dave?
There you go. DP got us back on track, Dave. On that note, how don't we take a little break? Let's just calm down a little bit. Wrestle with the fact that Boba Fett's overrated, and we will move into some more doom and gloom as we talk about what happened this week from Warner Brothers. You are listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network on the chairshot.com. On the back end, some more news out of Warner Brothers in DC.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
All right, welcome back, everyone. So, I'm just hopping over here to Bandwagon Nerds, the Twitter feed, at Bandwagon Nerds, and I'm looking through our feed, and I'm gonna retweet real quick this little post from DC Comics that says 6 days has a beautiful picture of Cyborg with a six behind him. It says DC Fandom. 8/22/20, 24 hours away. And the reason I'm retweeting that as we talk here on Sunday, even though this show will air on tomorrow, Monday, so not too far off, is because we had an article float around, a news report. I shared this with everybody of some really bad news that happened as Warner Brothers, as a result of this big merger between AT&T and Time Warner, led to significant layoffs. A third of DC Comics editorial staff were part of Monday's roughly 600 layoffs at Warner Media, including editors such as Brian Cunningham, Mark Doyle, Andy Corey, the latter of which formed a major part of DC's complete rebranding and organization of its comics output in the establishment of a Black Label line a few years ago. This is, I guess, first of all, it's just bad for the people that lost their jobs. And there's just nothing more you can really say about it. That in itself is bad. And is going to be really, I think, pretty devastating for the comics. But it wasn't just DC Comics. There was some of the wider DC Entertainment umbrella that was heavily hit by the layoffs. DC Collectibles, so a lot of the merchandising arm, and a vast majority of the staff working on the DC Universe streaming platform was also left go, which I think just kind of is another nail in the coffin for this all going to HBO Max. Reactions.
First of all, yeah, my heart goes out to everybody that's losing their job there, because it just absolutely sucks, and especially with everything else going on in the world, you know, that this happens too, and now you lose your job because of this, and that's horrible for everybody, and I don't want to see anybody ever lose their jobs, but I definitely can understand, you know, the whole media shift because of, you know, with them going to HBO Max, and it seems like everything DC is going there, that, you know, that section of the company gets hit hard, because you don't need everybody who is trying to do the DC streaming service anymore because it's on HBO Max. And, you know, that one sucks. And I think we kind of could have seen that coming either way, in a sense. Man, just because of the merger and everything, you know, I feel like we're not going to see anything too dramatically change, in my opinion, over the course of this stuff. And I know comics maybe hurt a little bit, but I think they're going to be okay. I think everything comic wise that people are writing comics, and I don't think that's really going to be hurtful. I'm interested to see if they try and make any kind of direction changes with the merger going through, and, you know, a different group of people at the forefront of everything. Cause it sounds like the VPs and, you know, everybody in the upper management was let go too. So is that going to change any courses with the comics or with movies or with anything else, you know, in the whole DC universe? Is anything else going to change? That's kind of what I'm interested to see what they do.
Right. I think one of the ones that I hate to warn you, there's one of the cuts that did happen, that at least I think I remember reading it, maybe not in this article that I shared with you all, but one of the biggest proponents of Zack Snyder's recut of Justice League was one of the people who is no longer with the company too. Does that mean anything for Zack Snyder's recut? I doubt it, with the amount of hype that's been going on behind it. But it's just, it's interesting. It's mildly concerning. Hey, what do you got?
The whole thing's concerning. I mean, I understand there's a business need that they had to make these cuts. I question the timing. Seriously question the timing 1,000%. As to why this had to be done right now. Because you're literally a week away from this mega event that you've pimped up and gotten everybody excited about. Now, you know, you've lost a third of roughly your people. And so everything you're going to put down at Fandom, you know, you got all these, you know, you're going to have some trailers, you're going to have speculation as to upcoming projects. Why should I believe for a second that a third of those projects aren't going to get shafted as well when you've scuttled a third of your staff? I mean, I really, from my standpoint, I get there's a business need to do it. I don't get why you couldn't have waited till after Fandom was done. Let people be excited. Now you've really, me personally, yeah, I'm still going to tune in, but I'm nowhere near as excited as I was a week ago because it's like
a year ago. Feels like a year ago.
That too. Because it's like, what? Why should I believe anything that these guys are capable of? They can't keep, you know, they can't keep their ship together. They can't keep things in order. They're having to get rid of a third of their staff because of, you know, cuts and just the problems that they're having. So for me, it's a problem that I understand that there's a reason they had to do it. But I tend to agree with DP that the comics division will probably be okay. But a lot of this stuff is because of the end of the DC streaming service, and they're going to do fine on HBO Max. And yeah, I agree with you that, okay, they may have lost some internal supporters for the Snyder Cut, but the hype train on that thing is going full bore. And there's like something that pops up on my feed every day where they're basically saying, you know, just the fucking scene with Diana and Darkseid alone was better than the what are they calling it? The Justice League now. I've heard that phrase thrown around for the first time.
Yeah, I love this hype train because it's going to crater the terrible Zack Snyder recut. But I'm sorry. No, I don't believe that. Maybe I believe that. I'm not sure. We'll see what happens. Here's the thing for me that I find worrisome is that the Fandom thing is going to go off without a hitch, and people are going to get really excited about it because the primary focus that people are going to take home from Fandom is going to be the movie side of it, which was the side that wasn't really hit all that hard. We're going to get shiny new Wonder Woman 1984 news. We're going to get Black Adam news. We're going to get Shazam news. We're going to get Aquaman 2 news. We're going to get the Batman news. We're going to get Zack Snyder Justice League news. The television branch is going to be exciting too, because even though the shift is going away from DC Universe, that was long predicted. We've been talking about it on this show forever, so it's not like it's a surprise. And so the hype train around those shows is also going to get ramped up. Where I don't think you can believe anything, Dave, and this is where I agree with you, is in the comic books division. Because that was the department that got gutted, is comic books and collectibles. So how do you answer those questions? And they're not going to. So people hoping for anything other than positive rainbows and lollipops out of DC fandom, you're barking up the incorrect tree, because those people aren't going to answer those questions. The future of the comics division is where I'm intrigued, because what is the direction they're going to go, especially since part of what they cut was some of the more adult material, the darker, more mature label. Like, it says it straight out in the article. It's like that Justice League Dark label, like of just the more grown-up stuff, that's the division that got lost. Are we rebuilding it? Are we just going family-friendly? What are we doing?
They were going to phase that out gradually anyway. There had been a lot of talk about that for the last year, that black label was getting phased out. So that wasn't particularly surprising to me. It was disappointing for a lot of the fans, like myself, who had read that and said, yeah, but I like that edgier stuff that's kind of like the more of like the Dark Horse Comics, sort of that vein of comic, that sort of thing. I'm wondering though, like with the losses that Disney's sustaining right now, does Marvel Comics take a similar hit right now? I mean, if they're looking at it, they're saying, hey, look, let's cut the comics division because that's a place we can make some cuts and the people who are there can still pump out content, because anybody, we've all read comics for most of our lives. We know that those people are horribly overworked, by and large.
Oh yeah, totally.
So I'm wondering if Disney makes the same sort of decision with Marvel Comics at some point, saying, look, we got to make cuts somewhere. This is the easiest, you know, the least painful way that we can do it.
Well, I guess that's the thing, is you're talking about financial cuts versus cuts as a result of a merger. Like, that's the thing that makes this so gross. And you both kind of alluded to it, is that these weren't cuts that were made because DC needed to save money necessarily in the way that we would traditionally believe it to save money. These were decisions that were made because Warner took over a company and is now eliminating what they perceive to be redundancies. And this is going to sound really silly and trite, and I'm sorry, but there's a Michael J. Fox movie from the 80s called The Secret of My Success. It's all about corporate takeovers and mergers. And there's a couple of different scenes that immediately pop into mind. The one is when Michael J. Fox's character shows up for the very first day at his big corporate job, and everybody's packing their offices. And he comes in and he's like, hey, my name's, you know, Brantley Foster. It's my first day on the job. And the guy's like, hi, kid. Nice to meet you. You're fired. And he's like, what? What happened? Corporate takeover. 90% of existing staff got liquidated. You are part of that 90%. And he goes off to look for a job. And then later at the end of the movie, as part of this climax, there's all these guys sitting in a boardroom and they're talking about the jobs that are going to happen, are going to be cut as a result of this takeover. And they're like, what's going to happen? He's like, well, most of them are going to have to go. And that's the reality of what happened here, is that this is the result of a merger that, as we look at entertainment, and we haven't talked about this in a long time, but this is really where I want us to go with this conversation. We're looking at entertainment monopolies coming back. And we've got two Goliaths right now, it's looking like. We've got Disney on one side. We've got Time Warner on the other. And they are both turning into monolithic entities, where that is starting to be where your entertainment comes from. We joked about it, and it sounds so doom and gloom, but I joked about this at the dinner table with the little O'Dowd, as we were like, well, son, Disney kind of owns everything. But damn, I had a great time at their theme park. Like, that's what's happening, though, is Time Warner is taking one side of the pie. And Disney has the other. And it's not even going to be really a battle between two. It's like, those are your options. And that's, to me, that's bad.
I think it's only going to get worse. And this year, especially, is where it's really going to take the hit, because all these companies can't afford to continue on or to, you know, stand on their own anymore because of the
hits that they're taking. Yeah, shit's going to get absorbed.
And they're just going to keep buying up everything they can. That's a big, it's a big problem. I'm not a fan of the monopolies. I like the, you know, ability for a better sake of word, mom and pop shops, or, you know, smaller entities to have an opportunity to do different things. And I think that's where a lot of creativity comes in. I think that's a big issue with a lot of places, is that you'll just get content because, well, I'm the only place to go. So, you know, we don't really care anymore about our content because you're going to watch it, 'cause that's the only option you have. And that's not good business, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add to that. I mean, you know, anytime you're talking about a constriction of competition, that's bad for business. Look at the WWE. There's our, you know, wrestling reference. Oh, you already made one today. But
I was like, I've ran down Dave Meltzer for like that's half right. the show.
but WWE is a good example of the dangers of, you know, monopolistic sort of situations. And, you know, you're looking at the same kind of a conundrum coming up here where, yeah, I mean, if entertainment's going to be funneled into, okay, you got Disney on one side, Time Warner on the other, you know, that really limits a lot of the avenues for some of these people to get their product out there. I mean, there's a lot of good independent films that are out there. We've all seen some of them, and that those avenues for distribution start getting narrower and narrower.
Well, one of the things is, like, if you know, where they cut all these different people and you cut out certain parts of a business that thrive on being able to do that part of the business, and you have some people take it over, you know, you just basically throw it in their lap. Hey, you're doing comics now. And it's like, what? Like, that's not what I do. I don't know how to handle this. And that's where it starts to fall apart, because you don't have the right people doing it.
I don't even know how to draw.
Right. I've never read a comic book in my life.
You're our inker now. Get your ass out there. Do it.
Right. Right.
Bring back the resurrect Stan Lee. Resurrect Jack Kirby.
Can we get guy back? Can we
John Romita?
Can we trade for Stan back, please? I got a few suggestions of people to get rid of. Anyway.
Oh, David. We're not talking about your hit list today. We're not going there. Yeah. Yeah, and
it'll be interesting to see.
Right.
My death list.
And here's the funny thing is we're sitting there, we're bemoaning this like monolithic entertainment stream source, and all three of us pay into both of them. Right?
Yeah, but really, what choice do we have, right? I mean, if you want to watch the stuff that we are most interested in,
right?
So they've just got us by the short hairs, Patrick.
I'm not disagreeing with you, and I think it's interesting because there are, like, I wonder what's going to happen to other streaming services as this goes on. Like, Netflix right now is able to stand on its own. Does that continue? Hulu is already a part of a Disney Plus package. Right. Like honest to God, I just caught myself because I was about to be like, well, Hulu's fine. No, Hulu's part of, you buy a part of Disney Plus, and that's a Hulu package along with ESPN, because Disney owns that as well. So Disney owns your sports, can own your TV shows. Netflix is really standing on its own. Amazon, because Jeffrey Bezos is worth a bajillion dollars, it's going to be fine. But we're looking at three. We got the big three, and I just wonder when other entities are going to get folded into that. Like, I question how much longer NBC and CBS can be their own thing. Are they their own thing? Like, I don't even know. But yeah, ABC is owned by Disney, so you can't say ABC. Fox is, like, Fox is on Disney Plus. What the fuck? Like, and Disney Plus is talking about releasing a second streaming service for their more adult Fox content. Yeah. So, like, I feel like I'm just walking in a circle here. I was like, well, we've got this. No, we don't. Yeah. No, this all sucks. God, tell me something happy. Give me something good, fellas. Because this isn't. This is making me sad. I'm beating myself up here.
I got tell nothing, DP.
Tell
got
me about
anything?
That video game documentary you shared with us, DP. Well, what was that all
about? I'll tell you about Marvel's Avengers game is coming out. They had a nice beta this weekend. You know, that was
that's
fun.
That's right. We did.
Got to play that.
That was kind of fun. That was
still
fun.
They still kind of look weird.
They look a little weird.
Oh, they look good. They look good.
Yeah.
I thought, the Hulk looks a little. Hulk looked a little weird, right, DP? But
yeah.
Yeah, but it just kind of looked funky to me. I don't know.
It's interesting. What platform are you playing it on, DP?
I played it on the PC. So I had it pre-ordered, and so it came out. If you had it pre-ordered for the PC, you could play the beta. I know on PS4 it was free to play no matter what.
Right.
So I've been.
And that's what we were doing. Yeah. It's weird. Like on the PS4, depending on what character you are, the light on the PS4 controller will light a different color. So if like you're Black Widow, it'll be lit red, and if you're Hulk, it's green. And I was like, damn, this thing is just charged. Why am I getting a red light on here? But that's why.
I'll freak you out.
It's adorable that you two have time to play video games.
Yeah. Well, look. It looks like a pretty interesting game, though. I mean, we'll see what the finished product is like.
I'm going to start to write them off as a business expense now. I think
there's one other thing we need. So. One thing we wanted to talk about that wasn't on the rundown that we were kind of mulling over
what's
in
that?
The chat. Release date for New Mutants.
Oh, that's true. We have
finally.
One. We do have one.
Do we?
Maybe.
Allegedly, it's August
28th. Maybe.
I'm shocked. Between I'm still that, shocked that it's going to actually be released to theaters. If it's going to be, if this happens, this is amazing.
Between that and Bill and Ted coming out on the same, that's a big.
Yeah, that'll give us something to talk about. I mean, two movies to potentially watch.
Yeah, plus, we could have a show of nothing but movie reviews coming up, which would be very,
very
exciting.
First time in 6 months, you know,
that'd be nice.
Right. I mean, look at us. We're gonna review a new movie for the Nerd Review. We're gonna maybe talk about a couple of movies that are actually coming out. Hopefully, they'll be affordable.
Yeah. Did we get a price point? Did we get a price point on Bill and Ted's?
Let's just see. We'll do this. I'm gonna check the old Amazon account.
Oh.
That's always a possibility. We'll whip that up here. Bill and Ted Face the Music. It is not listed as something I can check out yet. So they haven't put it in Amazon. That's what Google's for, right?
Yeah, I'm looking. I don't see a price point yet.
It's definitely doing both. Like, it's definitely streaming and theaters.
Yep. Yeah, at the same time.
Is New Mutants doing the same thing? Streaming and theaters
is not doing the same thing. I have not seen that it's going to streaming immediately. It's just theaters.
Bad idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what they're doing there. But
after this massive delay, it's like you've got this perfect vehicle to get this out. People are starved for new movies. Nope. Theaters only.
I love that they want to force me to sign up for their mailing list. Right away. I will say Bill and Ted Face the Music did get us a new Weezer song. That's always excitable.
Oh.
Or exciting.
That is exciting.
But yeah, there are good things on the horizon. I know. I hope that it will continue to track in a positive direction. It'll be interesting to see where all this news comes out. You know, short, long topic today, guys. I guess that's kind of where we are at the end of this. We'll keep the faith and, you know, the fans have been due a shorter show.
They are. I mean, all six of them.
It's true.
All six of them. Now that we've cut France out of the equation.
Yeah.
Both our viewers must be thrilled.
Very, very true. Very true. Okay. Well, I opened the show today talking about a podcast I checked out that was not one of, you know, part of the Chair Shot Radio Network. I don't know if you guys have this, but my question for this week was, what are podcasts that you listen to that don't have anything to do with thechairshot.com? Do you have any?
Oh, yeah. I like in our wheelhouse, the nerd-based stuff, like Comic Geek Speak, that's one I like. For like board games, the Dice Tower is a big one for me. The Secret Cabal. things like that. You know, I like those. I like the paranormal podcast. I listen to that as well as stuff they don't want you to know. That's a fun one.
I listen to formerly the Nerdist podcast. It's now ID10T with Chris Hardwick. He usually has some good guests on there, kind of all over the place. Carrie Hughes was on there recently, and he'll have some random different people on there, and them shooting the shit. You know, it's not, you know, usually if there's someone trying to sell something, a new movie that's coming out or whatever. And then there's You Made It Weird with Pete Holmes. And it's kind of the same thing. He has just random people on there. Like, hey, he had Adam Sandler on there recently, and that was pretty cool.
Oh, cool.
Those are kind of the two. If you like an old school one, it's not around anymore, but you can still listen to the old ones. If you ever listen to the 10-Minute Podcast, it is fantastic. It's with Will Sasso. And it's basically him just doing his Stone Cold impression and Hulk Hogan impressions and talking wrestling. It's a lot of wrestling talk. But it's, I don't remember how many episodes there were, but it's not on anymore, but you can go back and listen to them. And literally they're, for the most part, they're 10 minutes long. It's a 10-minute long podcast. And it's them just random goofy not shit that they talk about. Yeah. And it's hilarious. Tommy Blacha, who I think was a former writer for WWE and things like that. He's on there too. And it's just them goofing, shooting the shit for 10 minutes basically at a time. And there's some hilarious episodes on there of them just doing that shit. So go back and listen to that. If you got 10 minutes, pick a couple of them at random. They're hilarious.
Very cool. Very cool. Have I ever shared with you two that I have an intense dislike for Chris Hardwick?
No.
No, I've not heard that before.
Oh.
So let me share why I dislike Chris Hardwick. I dislike Chris, and it's probably not—it's not even fair to dislike the guy. So I want to put that out there that you know, sexual harassment accusations notwithstanding, and he's a bowler too. Like, because his dad was like a world class bowler.
Yeah.
But I don't like Chris Hardwick because of the Talking Dead.
Okay.
So, and here's why I dislike him because of the Talking Dead. It's because every episode of the Talking Dead opens with Chris Hardwick talking to the audience as if they are the most emotionally immature, stunted individuals on the planet. And so whatever happens, it's like, we need to take a moment and collect our feelings about what we just saw. This was a devastating life-changing thing and I know part of it's just the shtick to get you to watch Talking Dead, but it's always like, you are so emotionally invested into The Walking Dead that you just can't possibly handle starting the show without taking a break. Everybody just needs a moment to be calm. What a devastating loss to the team. And we have them here now. DP, the scientist, is with us to talk about it. But oh my gosh, we're just all devastated right now. Just a heart-wrenching episode of The Walking Dead. No, Chris, no, it wasn't. It was an episode of Walking Dead. We've grown to expect after 50 million seasons, people gonna die. We're okay. Talk about the show.
He's got to sell it, man. He's got to sell it.
No.
Don't you think that? You think that's him or that's the people in charge telling him to do that?
He writes the damn show.
Does he?
Anyway. Well, he hosts it. I don't know if he writes it. He gets to do the post. He did the post show for a couple of other the Walking Dead spinoffs and all that stuff. I think I hate it because it's that attitude about kind of the nerd culture in general, is that we're all a bunch of emotionally stunted human beings that can't handle anything, as if other human beings.
He's jokes. Right about that part, but anyway.
But they're not, because human beings are connected. We have connections to characters and we get sad or we get emotional over things. Like, I have been very open that the ending to Endgame, when Cap yells Avengers Assemble, I am like, oh, it's so great. But I don't need a support group to get me through it. I don't need a discussion point to get me through it. And it's not like, you don't see, like, go watch people after a fucking episode of Grey's Anatomy or, oh gosh, This Is Us. like those people, just like anybody else in their reactions to anything. Like, this is just people now.
That's just
why we got to be the ones that don't are emotionally immature.
Good, right. And you could do that for any show. If any show had an after show where they talked about it, it'd be the same thing. It just so happens
so that much it was to the go through. Dead. We have to process everything that we just saw in Walking Dead. We're going to talk through it. We're going to get you through this.
Right. It's a therapy session. Stupid. Love it.
Anyway, that's enough therapy.
One of my favorites I'm a fan of Chris Hardwick and watched him on At Midnight when he hosted that. And I thought it was a fun little goofy show. And there was one, we actually went and saw him when he came to Milwaukee for doing one of his stand-up tours. So we went and saw him and actually had like front row of the balcony seats. And he does a lot of interactions with the crowd and stuff like that. And there was one episode of At Midnight where him and Dan Harmon was on there. The guy who did Community. And I think he co-writes for Rick and Morty or something. He's done a bunch of different shows and they were going back and forth on one of these jokes of basically, how is your dick like a clown? And we're like going back and forth about random things of, jokes about it. And so he was asking the audience of different things. And so I screamed out, how is your dick like a clown? In the middle of this comedy, stand up that he was doing. And he heard it, just put his head down. He was like, fucking Dan Harmon. And I was like, yeah, all right. Felt good.
Look at you. Look at you. All right. Well, yeah. Guys, I think that's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you and where else they can listen to you? Kick us off this week, Mr. Scientist, if you please.
Well, you can kind of find me all over the chairshot.com these days, especially on the entertainment section. We got A Winner Is You still going strong. Episode 8, we're going to do our first top 10 coming for episode 10. So we're still trying
to
decide.
You better give us props for...
100% have given this to the Bandwagon Nerds for all of our top 10s.
And you better give yourself like 4 hours, too.
Yeah. Is your show 7 hours long for that one? Here's the thing, DP, you run a much tighter ship than I do on the podcast. Kudos to you. I'm more of a rambling, move about, go with the flow sort of host. You do a much better job than I do, sir.
We've noticed.
Anyway. Oh, somebody's fired.
So, yeah, find that.
You like Warner Brothers cut the writers division. Right?
Yeah, we can cut a third of this show right off the top, right? Follow Winners You on Twitter and Facebook at A Winner Is You. And also the DWI podcast. Follow that at Podcast DWI and Facebook.com/DWI podcast. And go to ProWrestlingTees.com/A Chair Shot to get your A Winner Is You t-shirt, which I'm wearing right now, or the Bandwagon Nerds t-shirt that's out there as well.
Very nice. You guys realize, speaking of episodes, I know Winners You's coming up on 10th episode. This is our 40th episode, guys.
Ooh.
Hey.
10 what, away what, from 50.
What anniversary is that? Is that like it's not like paper? Opal?
Irrelevant. Irrelevant. Yeah. Probably.
When we get to 52, though, that's the 1 year anniversary of the show, and so I do think we got to start putting our minds to what we want to do for the 1 year Annie.
Break quarantine? I don't know, something like that.
Yes, we'll all go to a different part of our town since we can't get to each other, as we are in three distinct parts of the country.
We'll go and meet at a Holiday Inn in Lincoln, Nebraska, and that'll be enough.
Oh god, fuck Nebraska.
Okay, so Patrick's pissed off France and Nebraska in the same show.
Scott Frott. It's more about the University of and their petulant whining over threatening to leave the Big Ten when Big Ten called off things. I was like, whatever, guys, stop it.
Well, as far as checking me out, you can find me on Twitter at Attitude Ag, that is at Attitude AGG, and on Facebook.com/Attitude of Aggression. And for the 2 or 3 or 10 of you listening who aren't from France, make sure you follow us at Bandwagon Nerds. Let's not forget that.
I've been doing pretty good about pimping the Bandwagon Nerds lately. So thank you.
You can never hear it too many times.
You cannot, because we need the followers, for God's sakes. And vote in the polls when we put them up. Because of you all not voting, we had to pick our own movie for a change. Jeez. Anyway.
I had to think.
You can follow.
Ugh.
Independent thought. So overrated.
That's what Twitter's for.
One of us. Anyway, you can follow me at Wrestling Realist on the Twitter. That is at WrestlingRealist. You can hear me every Monday here on Bandwagon Nerds. You can also hear me every Wednesday on the Greg DeMarco show, where I talk wrestling with Greg DeMarco and Miranda Morales. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Now climb yourselves out of the basement. Get some sun, unless you're in California, because it's 9,000 degrees.
Stay away.
And watch some streaming shows on one of the two monolithic entertainment systems. And don't forget, Boba Fett's overrated. You've been listening to Bandwagon Nerds.
No good to me dead.